Grinders, and welcome back to another episode of Experience Grind Podcast. You thought you were getting away from me now that Jackass July is over, but surprise, I'm still the host, bitch. My name is Sean, and with me, as always, are two of the three co-hosts, starting first,
as sometimes,
the heel corner, donning a red mask. And suspenders for some reason. He can't quite do a backflip off the top rope, but he will fall on you. It's Ryan. What's up, dude?
Oh, I'm so good at falling. The falling heel is what they call me.
Sick. That sounds like a move that would give you a wild black eye.
If I could land it, but I can only fall.
Which would give you the black eye.
That's how it usually goes.
Other guys. So no matter what, it's given a black eye. It's pretty sick. Good to have you back. And with him, have you guys figured out? I don't know if this other person laughed yet, but did you guys figure out who's not here? Who is here?
Hey!
Underneath that ghost face mask, it's Kyle Bryan. What's going on?
Kyle Bryan. I love it. Yeah. I'll wear two faces. I'll be Kyle Bryan.
Hell yeah. Please do. I want Kyle's opinion on things throughout the show. That would be great. If you guys aren't subscribed to Patreon.
I regret everything.
You should, so that this week you can hear about how much Ryan hates women, which is something that became fact because he wasn't here last week. So let's do something for Kyle, since he's not here, for it to become fact. And then this will teach people to not miss episodes, no matter the circumstances.
He doesn't hate. He doesn't. All right, so let's be clear. Kyle does not hate foreigners. He just feels very uncomfortable around them.
I don't know.
But he does not hate them. Why? But he does not hate them.
Do get it. We went mini golfing last time we went down to visit, and he did, every time he heard an accent, he did skirt around the edge of the green away from them. And I thought it was odd, but now that you mention that, I just thought he was catching a weird draft or something from around the pole. But that makes so much sense. Mm-hmm. Anyways.
Just doesn't know what to do.
Yeah, I guess.
Becomes all tongues.
Much like... people that are just looking for love and acceptance and to be who they are, they just don't know what to do. Much like somebody we might be talking about today, a little guy named David Arquette. I guess he's not very little, but we watched a quick hour and 30 minute documentary called You Cannot Kill David Arquette for today's episode. If you listened to last week, I was desperately trying to grasp for what it was that I told you guys like a month ago that I wanted to watch. Then I just had a moment, an epiphany, like 4 days ago.
All it takes is one moment of clarity.
Yeah, that is what it is. And yeah, and I had you guys watch this. Now, I have two questions. One, had you guys ever heard of this prior to me mentioning it in, I'm sure, post episode a couple of months ago?
Nope.
Same. Nope.
Did you guys know what this was going to be about going into watching it?
Absolutely not.
Nope. Never even heard of it.
I guess I have a third question. At what moment were you like, what the fuck?
I don't know that I was. I feel like, you know, David Arquette kind of disappeared from the public eye unceremoniously. And I don't think I ever questioned it. I was never like, man, whatever happened to David Arquette enough to look into it. And also, I, you know, wasn't big on following wrestling, so I would not have seen how everything kind of blew up for him. And yeah.
What about you, Ryan?
Yeah, I was sold immediately with the idea or the concept behind the documentary. It sounded really fascinating. I was not familiar with any of it, so it would be learning all of this, like, very weird piece of Hollywood slash wrestling history that I knew nothing about. So I was into it, especially as a fan of Ready to Rumble. And this was very tangentially connected. I thought there might be more connection with that than there was, but I was excited for this.
There actually is, and it's something that they didn't get into, but it was very much so at the same time that that movie came out. And Vince Russo, dude's fucking... You know when someone has, like, a really great idea? Like, he was responsible for a lot of the early Attitude Era stuff, like that Crash TV kind of thing. Uh-huh. But then you was completely unable to break away from that when it's no longer relevant or it's in the zeitgeist of the time, like, you've got to change. So he had seen this thing, and it just... Yeah, it was absolutely related to Ready to Rumble. But it wasn't something that was brought up in here. And listeners, if you have not paused this and gone and watched this and come back, I do recommend that you do. I think this is on Pluto, maybe.
You can watch it for free on Fandango.
Okay. Awesome. I have it, so I didn't know if it was anywhere. But this follows, if you know, really, if you're a longtime wrestling fan or just kind of know wrestling history in general, back in, I think it's either 99 or 2000, David Arquette was just kind of out of nowhere in WCW, made the world heavyweight champion, which is just, it's weird to even say that out loud. Thinking about David Arquette at the time, you know, think like the Scream days, you know, and Eight-Legged Freaks and all of those really wild things that and goofy things that were coming out at that time. And now, like, put the big gold belt on him. It pissed. It, like, to this day, people are still pissed that he got that belt. Like, honestly, if WCW wasn't going under the next year, this was, like, the nail in the coffin for that business, because how do you come back from that in something that has such a storied history of being, they at least respect the lineage of titles and try to keep up kayfabe and make it real. You see in this movie, like, you see the promos prior and, like, oh my God, everybody hates him. And then backstage they're hugging and congratulating. Like, that's the reality of it. It's a performance. And right. Keeping up that watcher side show is a big part of it. So absolutely ripping that away was a big, big no-no. So this is about David Arquette. From that point forward, like, Hollywood would no longer really take him seriously. He said at one point during this, he was going on 10 years of auditions and not really getting any parts. Depressed, lonely, alcoholic, and not really finding that love and respect from people when it's something that he has loved and respected for his whole life in wrestling. And so this movie's about him actually going and getting training and just actually becoming a wrestler and everything that he went through in a year to do that, to very scary things that happened to him while doing it, and then just the success that he found from that. It is just so crazy. Because if you don't follow those gossip things like TMZ, or if you don't know wrestling, I think I mentioned that David Arquette wrestled a couple of weeks ago, and you guys are like, wait, what? Hold up.
Yeah, I had no idea.
No.
But I remember when he was doing his indie runs and just hearing the praise that he was getting from people. I was like, are we talking about the same David Arquette here?
Like, that'd be a great stage name if it wasn't the real David Arquette.
Oh, man. That's actually a fantastic persona to if somebody doesn't know, if your face isn't on the match card and you see David Arquette and you're just ready to boo and they announce him coming out, you're like, boo, boo. And out comes this long, long-haired, blonde, super machismo dude. You're like, wait, what?
But, David Arquette, Courtney no Cox relation. Is his valet.
So yeah, I don't know. I don't know how we typically do documentaries here, but I want to hear your guys' thoughts on this and like your thoughts and feelings as this journey went forward on this. It's we're going from him kind of recounting everything that happened at that point 18 years ago to really pushing himself to like, I'm going to do this. I need to do this. I need to like, this is something I love so much. And I don't know why people hate me kind of thing. And just trying to find that redemption. So anybody want to jump in and share some thoughts on this journey? Ryan.
I've got some thoughts. So first, I really enjoyed this. I thought this was a very fun documentary. I think it is framed very interestingly, which is Hollywood actor comes into WCW, gains a title, kind of diminishes the spirit and honor and legacy of said title by doing so. And then in the midst of, to be generous, I will say an existential midlife crisis, decides to do the same thing for redemption. Which is a little weird to me, that it's like, hey, this thing I did that got everybody mad, I'm going to do it again. But this time I'm going to do it really serious. It's an interesting idea. And I do think...
add a clarifier there.
Huh?
I can add a clarifier there. At least in the 2000s, like, he didn't have any training, and this was, like, him just getting booked to do that. So he wasn't even a wrestler. He was just an actor that was brought in and given the belt, which is
promoting
what the huge
his
issue
movie.
Is.
Yeah.
No, I mean, exactly. I get it. But it also feels like it is very hard to get away from it feeling a bit centered around ego here. And it feels like, I don't know.
100%.
Again, I was not there when this first thing happened in the 1999-2000. It feels like a lot of fans saw like Hollywood coming in and kind of just appropriating their thing. And he's, again, he's putting in the effort. You're not wrong this time. But again, it's like Hollywood's coming in and doing the thing. But this time he's doing the work. And it's like, okay, well, but it's still Hollywood coming in and doing the thing. But I guess it kind of matters a little bit less now that we have like Batista, John Cena, The Rock, and all these people coming in and out like so frequently, and now there's like this kind of melting pot. So it's like, it is whatever. Like, it is just an interesting framing for me. But I think the whole journey is very fascinating. I like the different parts they stop at. Like, I love the Tijuana stuff. The street fighting I thought was fantastic, and I could have watched a whole movie or a whole documentary about just them and that
culture. Can you break that down real quick for the listeners?
Yeah. So at one point,
great point.
At one point, David Arquette, in the midst of his training, goes down to Mexico, Tijuana specifically, I think, to meet up with some people and do some wrestling. And some of the people he meets up with are like these kind of luchadors who do like these street matches. And what they do is like in the middle of an intersection with like all these parked cars and traffic, they're doing like these intricate fucking wrestling moves and like flipping around, and like, it's really wonderful to see. And then afterwards they go and collect tips from the people in the cars, and then they go back. And it's like, it's really fascinating. It's super fascinating. And it kind of speaks to like what I think, what ultimately works in the documentary for me, is you just see the love of wrestling, the love of and passion for this thing come through. And it's these moments that I think like really speak out to me. I the framing is weird. The pacing's a little weird. I think they spend a lot of time in certain parts and then like really rush through things. I don't know how far we want to get into like the ending. I'll save that. But I think the ending goes real quick, and then they try to push in this other angle, I'm like, we just compressed 2 years into like 5 minutes of this movie when we spent like so long in these other parts. But whatever. It's very interesting. But it's always fascinating. All of these, mm-hmm. I think, are like weird choices, but they're fascinating choices that can be talked about. And I think more than anything, I like, this is what I like in a movie and a documentary, especially. Give me interesting swings. And I think this movie takes interesting swings.
I think that the framing, I think what they didn't do is spend enough time talking about how that perception of like Hollywood coming in and taking that thing, like that is where the blame for all of that 20 years ago should have gone to the promoter and the booker of said program. It wasn't his choice. It wasn't his idea to come in here and do this. This is something that for him, that is a lifelong wrestling fan, dude's like, hey, come in and do this. And I think DDP at some point is like, he didn't even want to get the belt. Like at this point, like why right. would he want to do that? But hey, if someone's saying, hey, we're going to do this, are you going to say no? No, probably not. But as fans, that's the person that they see getting it. And so that's who they're going to blame. So that's why this, like all of these 20 years of like, I don't know why I'm here. Like, I understand, but like, why am I hated here? And so it's really cool to see when he goes in the first match, he tries to get booked on. And this is a huge ego thing to what you were saying, is he's trying to get booked onto the Nasty Boys show. It's like, dude, you still haven't even done any training at this point. And he's like drunk meeting up with them, almost fighting them in a bar. And next thing you know, this guy that I've never even heard of has got him in his van going to a backyard wrestling show where the first match that he's had in all of these years, he's getting hit with light tubes and thrown onto thumbtacks. I mean, that's dry if I've ever fucking seen it.
They beat the shit out of him in that first backyard match.
Yeah, he was.
And he's so unprepared for it.
Dude got juice on his first night. Crazy.
Yeah.
Brian, why don't you...
Ryan pointed out the blurring of lines between acting and wrestling with, you know... Dave Bautista, John Cena, The Rock, etc. Hulk Hogan obviously started the trend. But it's always been wrestlers going into acting. It's not the actors showing up in wrestling. And if they did, God forbid, they actually win a title. That's insane. That corrupts the whole idea of what we're doing here. So I understand the hatred. What sucks for David Arquette is that he's already been pigeonholed in this. He's typecast because of the Scream movies, because of the things he's been doing. Before this, he was like looked at as like a legitimate actor. He was doing different roles. And then because of the Scream movies and whatnot, he got typecast as this like goofy, dumb guy. And then he had the opportunity to do this thing that he's loved his whole life. They give him the belt and all of a sudden everybody hates him. So now he's not getting work in Hollywood. And the thing that he loves, everybody hates him for. So, like, this is a man who's just broken and has nothing anymore. So this is, like, his journey at finding some way to kind of grasp that back and kind of redeem himself. And he has no control over whether or not he's getting Hollywood roles. So he's like, might as well go the wrestling route. And it's interesting that Ryan brought up the Tijuana street fighting, because I feel like it's such a good case study of the whole documentary, because these guys do not respect him when he shows up. They're like, who is this fucking guy? He's awful. But he puts in the work. He shows his effort. He shows that he's there to learn. And by the end, they respect him. And it just that little microcosm of the documentary is so reflective of the whole thing. Because like, even as you're watching it, you're like, wow, these people hate him. He goes to like this, it was a convention, this tiny little convention, so in like sad. A motel in Richmond, Virginia. And he's sitting at a table and nobody is coming over to him. And he's David Arquette. Like, you could go get something signed, but nobody's going to him. No, because he's legitimately hated in this universe. And so he decides, yeah, I'm gonna do what I can to do this right. And against all of his family's wishes and his own health problems. I mean, this is like a year after he had a heart attack. He's going to start wrestling. Can we talk about the ketamine signing?
Existential crisis.
Real quick on that signing. It is so heartbreaking. Like, you see him get the call from the promoter for the signing and he is excited just for him to show up and nobody wants him within 200 miles of this place.
Like, even the guys at the other booths are like, fuck that guy.
Yeah. He ruined our industry.
It's nuts. Like,
and again, you're a guy that's in the industry.
You know.
Yeah. He didn't book himself. He had no say.
And that's another thing. Like, imagine that you love something your whole life and you get an opportunity to do it. And then through no fault of your own, all of a sudden that whole industry turns against you. That's got to be like the worst feeling. And you can tell, like, this guy's going through it. Like, he has, it's funny because he has like this amazing support system with his family and they keep showing up for him. And it's not enough because I don't know if this is like an actor thing or like a person, somebody who's in the public eye. They tend to need that external validation. Mm. And he's not getting it at all. Like, he has his family and he's got a good life, it seems. But there's still, he's struggling with the idea that all these people hate him. And he didn't really do anything wrong. So the best way he can see to redeem himself is to do the thing for real. And he gets the shit kicked out of him, but he keeps showing up and he keeps trying. And like, even watching it, you're like, is this guy for real? Like, why is he doing this to himself? And you're like, you feel bad for him. And you're kind of cringing. Like, why is he going through with this? But you're also like, why are these people like legitimately hurting him and trying to like there was a match that he goes against Nick Gage.
That guy actually tries
to kill him, basically.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And Nick Gage is problematic in his own right. Yeah. Like, he's, for a lot of things, huge trans rights supporter, huge ally in so many communities, wildly outspoken.
That's great.
I was always under the impression that this was an accident, that what happened, because you can pull it, you can poke,
sure,
but the incident that you're alluding to, I'm sure we'll get into in more detail after, but that is he's a huge deathmatch wrestler, wildly popular, very troubled background.
I did a little bit of looking at his background and was surprised at some of the stuff I saw, so.
Yeah. Lots of drugs, bank robberies.
Bank robbery is, yeah.
Yep. Yep.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But yeah, David Arquette just wants to be taken seriously. And this is the path that he thinks is going to be the easiest to kind of regain some of that credibility and admiration. And yeah, it's really interesting because the journey that you go on as a viewer is like, why? And by the end, you're like, good for him.
He did it. Yes. Yeah. It is a very interesting human study. And you're right. By the end of it, I don't know why you chose some of the things you chose to do, but I am so happy. I am so happy for you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's cool to see him getting the respect of the community and doing it the hard way and really just putting in the effort.
Or doing it the way you're supposed to.
Doing it the stupid way. But yeah.
I mean, dude's like, what? He was 47, 46, 47, he had said, when he was going on this journey. This encapsulates like a year and a half worth of his life here. Like, it's wild to see when he goes from that backyard wrestling to, he basically goes to a little shitty garage wrestling school thing mm-hmm. in there. They're doing the interviews with everybody, and even the coach or the head coach is kind of talking shit about him. You guys talked so like I am blown away by the stuff, the Mexico City and Tijuana stuff that they mm-hmm. went through, just the journey there and how much, not even just like learning, but the way you can see in the street fighting when the street wrestling after he does his first thing. And yeah, honestly, here's the thing, guys, if I was at a stoplight in Pittsfield here where I live, and any one of the 400 panhandlers started a wrestling match in front of my car, that is the way to get me to give you some fucking money.
Absolutely.
That is happening.
Put on a show.
Like, I don't even care if it's bad wrestling. Like, shitty wrestling. Just hit him in the head with a chair.
I'll give you some money.
Here's a tenner. Like, I don't care what you do with it. But, like, how bad he is the first time, and then he goes back to the light, and they're talking shit in Spanish, and then you just watch it. You just see him, like, just studying what they're doing. And, yeah, to the crowd who... in Mexico, who probably don't even really know who he is. They right. don't care. They're just there for wrestling, and they're cheering by the end. It's wild. It's wild. What makes the story even more so, I don't know, heartwarming to me is that you just like, if you do any base research on David Arquette, or if you know anything about him, he's just a good dude. Like,
yeah,
he's constantly just donating money that he's not bringing any in of because, you know, gigs. But but like he has money and he's constantly donating and doing philanthropic stuff. He's a Bob Ross painter, certified painter. He just does so much like fundraising stuff to then hear that such a large portion of entertainment, I guess wrestling's not a large portion, but even just like a substantial portion of like entertainment just loathes this guy. It's like, how do you hate this guy? How do you hate this guy? So yeah, he almost gets murdered. So actually RJ City, which is one of the first guys that kind of took him seriously, he works for AEW right now. A lot of the people that you see in this currently work for AEW. So Jack Perry, he was at the end, Luke Perry's son. Pretty Peter Avalon, who helped train him, was part of AEW in the beginning. You see Arquette shit-talking MJF, which is one of the biggest stars in the world right now. So it's like there's a lot of interconnectivity back then with what's like really blowing up right now, which is kind of cool. But RJ City and him have a feud off the rip. It's really his first step into exposure. And granted, like, this was a big show, but when you think about these bigger indie shows, it's still very localized to where they are. So that was definitely Southern California where that show was. And you can tell because Joey Ryan was on that show, and he is blackballed and canceled from the industry because he's a dirtbag. Yeah, he got Me Too'd a couple years ago. Anyways, yeah, it turns out him, Paul Rubens, and RJ City were all very close. And so that kind of ties into the last documentary that we had. You may have noticed the Paul Rubens tattoo right on the back of his arm.
But it's funny, like the last two documentaries we've done have both had David Arquette in them.
Yep. So RJ City gets him his exposure there, which that blows up. And he's starting to get gigs kind of everywhere. And not just small gigs, like he's getting big, substantial gigs, like a 10,000 person attendance show. That's a very large show for something that's not WWE or AEW or like New Japan once a year. Like that is a very, very big show. So that is a huge booking. That's at the end. That thing. The Nick Gage thing is a GCW promotion thing. So that's Game Changer Wrestling, that probably 1,500, 2,000 people, probably there tops. But I don't know. Who wants to break down that beauty of what happens to him?
Anybody? I don't know about a breakdown. Ryan, I don't know if I'm so good enough.
I see him talking, but he is.
I am?
Mama muted. Yeah, I can't hear you.
No, that's not good.
Oh.
Is he muted for you as well, Brian?
He sure is.
Listeners, is he muted to you?
And probably not, because he's recording locally.
Yeah, there's a good chance it was still there recording on Audacity.
Cool.
Or Audition or awesome. Whatever.
Well, you know Discord. What, listeners? I'm not going to fix that, so.
Yeah, it's fine.
Enjoy. Behind the scenes.
Yeah.
There's enjoy. No kayfabe and experience grind. I think the Nick Gage fight is interesting, and I am definitely not qualified enough to break it down. But there is definitely, like, if this documentary is framing, like, David Arquette versus the people's opinion of David Arquette, I think that is encapsulated in this fight, because mm-hmm. there is some underlying animosity just like bleeding through Nick Gage. Like, there's no reason to go like as hard as he does, as often as he does. The pizza cutter feels just like unnecessary. And then like the way
that's his staple.
Okay, maybe.
That's his thing.
All right, if that's his gimmick, then
so I'll did slide. Immediately after this movie, I was intrigued and then went and watched The Dark Side of the Ring, the Vice episode about this, because amazing. I was really kind of, I got kind of like pissed watching it. I
you
was
might
like,
be the most qualified to talk about
I was
that.
Like, I was kind of not happy with this match. And I wanted to see like how much of it was like maybe just played up, because like there is like a bit of like dramatizing of things here, because like, all right, so we speaking of the Tijuana fight, right, and like how he earns their trust and everything, it ends on this climactic shot of them all screaming on boulders in front of the sunset, and I'm like, this is the most cinematic thing you could think of, like this didn't not happen naturally, fuck, wink 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 wink. And so like there is some like overplaying, so I was like, is this Nick Gage thing is like, is just being overplayed, and like it was right? No.
Are we just keeping the kayfabe? No.
Nick Gage, like, in this documentary where they're interviewing him for Vice, he's just like, man, he was being a pussy. Like, whatever. Like, he didn't handle it, whatever. And, like, was, like, completely unsympathetic. Was not, like, playing it up at all. And David Arquette said something like, ahead of the match, they had, like, an agreement where they were talking through what they would and would not do. And he was like, hey, I'm an actor. Like, hit me anywhere, do whatever you want, just, like, don't cut the face. And he was, like, at one point, like, he remembers Nick Gage, like, with the pizza cutter cutting his head, and he was just saying, like, in his ear, just, like, don't be a pussy, it's not gonna hurt, or something, as he's doing it. And he's, like, not the face, not the face, we said not the face. And then he puts the pizza cutter in the mouth, and it's just, like, yeah, Nick Gage had a point to prove. And it for me, it came across very clearly as, we are going to take you down, you have disrespected us, and I'm going to disrespect you. And it felt like, I don't know. It just felt like a dog pissing and marking its territory. I did not like Nick Gage in this match at all. And the Vice kind of documentary just kind of reaffirmed that for me.
Yeah. I think but a big thing.
What did you guys
for Nick
think?
Gage is he's got a very, very fervent fan base, as you can tell. As you know, you've got David Arquette coming out. We haven't even talked about, he's basically his gimmick is a showman. Like, he's coming out right. in this magician robe, and he's doing like little magician, like throwing out the strings from his hands. It's very showy. It's very on brand, and honestly works so well.
One of my favorite parts of this whole movie is when he says, I'm just tired of being seen as a joke, but he's like on the back of a horse vaping wearing a magician cape. It's like, all right, dude.
Oh, God. But he is in that world, the GCW world. He has just got this fervent fan base. And I think at some point, like, I don't know. This is where when wrestlers get into their start believing in it too much, right? And it's like when he's, well, this is what my fans want me to do, and this is what I should be believing for my fans. Yes. And like that is way too fucking far. And quick side note, you found The Dark Side of the Ring. I highly recommend literally watching all of those. They're in the middle of season 5, I think, right now. And like Big Boss Man was just like 2 days ago. It's that show is fucking fantastic. Anyways, yeah, this is you didn't even say what happened to him here. Besides other quick funny note. Nick Gage was on an AEW show a couple years ago fighting Chris Jericho, and he did the pizza cutter spot right on his head. And funny enough, as soon as he started doing it, they cut to commercial and immediately cut to a Domino's commercial.
Dead. I love it.
Serious.
That's incredible.
Brian, do you want to break down what happens to between Nick Gage and Arquette here?
Yeah. Basically, Nick Gage starts just wailing on him with these fluorescent light tubes and just keeps doing it over and over. I don't know where he keeps finding more of them, but like he seems to have an unlimited supply of these things.
It was a bundle of light tubes that he brought. So it was like 8 of them just taped together.
And he's like, he's dragging him across his skin. He's doing all sorts of crazy stuff. Like, usually you just whack him with it. It breaks. It does the big explosion. It's like, oh, cool. That was a cool effect. Let's move along. But no, he's like using the broken tubes and like hitting him with them. And then what happens is they get into like a hold situation. And he still has this broken fluorescent light tube in his hand. And they like flip around and it catches David Arquette right in the neck. And he starts bleeding profusely. And he gets up and starts to walk away because you can tell like this is not going to plan. Like the crowd gets quiet. He's like, I got to get out of here. I'm going to die. But on his way out, he stops. He turns around and goes back into the ring to finish the match, gets pinned, and then goes to the hospital. And that is a moment in the documentary where people were like, oh, he's for real about this.
That is one of, it's so crazy. That is one of, like, words can't describe like how in awe I am that somebody was stabbed in the neck.
Yeah.
Is putting pressure on his neck to slow the bleeding down.
And goes back walks out of the ring.
And then goes, I'm going to go finish this match. And gets back in the ring. If at the end of the day, you didn't respect him after that, as a wrestling fan, I don't get it. Like he gets pinned and his hand moves away from his neck for a second while he's getting pinned before he quickly goes back up. And it's just spewing blood out of there.
Yeah.
Like,
it's gnarly.
It's gross. And, you know, you've got Luke Perry driving him to the hospital. Because, Luke
son
Jack, huge, you know, huge wrestling fans. Jack would, Luke would bring Jack to wrestling events all while he was growing up. So it's, I don't know why I didn't see that coming, but yeah, I mean, wild. What I don't get is you have the backyard wrestling, right, at the beginning, which is basically, it's a hardcore match, and then he gets serious about it, and he goes to Mexico, he's doing Lucha Libre. He does the RJ City stuff, which legit like wrestling stuff. There's some comedy stuff in there, but you know, all said and done, well put together stuff. And
he's training with Diamond Dallas Page.
Other matches that are normal. And then next thing you know, he's in a death match with Nick fucking Gage. for some ungodly reason, and then goes back to just normal matches again. Like, I get it. You go through something like that, you like earn, I guess you earn respect, but also at the same time, on the flip side of it, it's very, that kind of thing's very divisive in that, like, there is a whole, I'm sure like 70% of wrestling fans are just like, those deathmatch wrestlers, they can't even wrestle. They're just skewering their bodies and cutting themselves up. And it's like, it is very looked down upon in the wrestling world, in the general wrestling world. And yeah, so it's interesting to go to those extremes to get that respect when it's already, I guess if you already don't have the respect of everybody, you're still gaining some from people, and those other people that didn't like you still won't. So whatever, I don't know. Maybe I just talked myself into the answer.
Dying for some credibility.
I guess. But then to what Ryan had said, pacing in this movie is a bit odd. A lot of this is the background and the journey up to that Nick Gage match. And then, oh, he's drinking again and puking and he doesn't have any motivation. He's putting on some weight. Dude went from being a keg to getting fucking ripped.
Yeah.
In a few short months. It's crazy. To now he's got a little bit of belly again and he's drinking again. And he's throwing up. To it cuts to him training in a ring again and going and doing this last match. So it's the pacing here is a little odd. And do you guys have any thoughts as to maybe why they did that? Or
I
was all
a movie is made three times, right? When you write it, when you shoot it, and when you edit it. I feel like a documentary is only made one time, and it's only in editing.
It's all in editing.
The very end, it is so odd that I swear there's a line about, like, the last year was like, I had a blah, 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 and it was a mess. There is a year compressed into like 5 minutes, and it is crazy that they do that. And then they also drop this, like, Luke Perry bomb to then set up the sun as like this ending point. And it's like, there was a much probably more natural way to just like pepper this shit in. Like, what are we doing here? It's not necessarily bad. It is just real quick. And the Luke Perry stuff is a little bit out of nowhere. It's like, oh, stop. Unless you really knew David Arquette, and I guess we're following TMZ and some of the stuff. I didn't know his personal connection with Luke Perry at all. So for me, it just felt like at the very end, like, oh, we're going to stop and talk about Luke Perry. And oh, okay, now his son's in. And so at the very end, when it all ended, I was like, well, now I'm disappointed because, like, Luke Perry's son being so into wrestling, like, I feel like there's maybe a story there too. And then we're just going to end the movie. And it's, I don't know. It's weird. It's a weird ending. But
yeah.
What about you guys? What do you think?
Ryan.
I do feel like the end was abrupt, and they kind of tried to shoehorn in the Luke Perry and Jack Perry stuff as just a way of having a nice ending. Because the only thing I can think of is the reason they didn't pepper it in is because they didn't shoot any coverage. They didn't have enough footage of them being around to really use in the documentary. It seems like they built this thing. Obviously, the Nick Gage match is like your high point. This is what we're leading to. This is where he gets all of his credibility. People respect him. And from there, it's like, okay, yeah, he wrestles for a while longer, but like, it's not as important. There's nothing as consequential happening. And you can't just like, I mean, like, you could do the typical documentary thing and be like, David Arquette continued to wrestle for, just a little, you know, but like, I don't know. It's like they found something that they could tie it to, and they're like, oh yeah, we'll end it with the Luke Perry thing, and that'll be cool. It's interesting because it keeps going back and forth between the wrestling and his family and the wrestling and his family. And then, like, at a certain point, it stops with the family stuff. Like, okay, his wife, Christina. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Courtney Cox 2.0.
Oh, my God. I never realized how much they look the same. But, like,
David Arquette looks exactly like Miss Elizabeth.
Speaking of Miss Elizabeth, when she shows up wearing the dress, I was like, oh, that's actually really sweet. And that could have been like the nice ending tied up in a bow. Boom. And they're like, oh, also Luke Perry.
Yeah, that's
so like, yeah. It's interesting that they kind of bookend his comeback career with this backyard wrestling event where he's getting the shit kicked out of him and getting whacked with the fluorescent tubes, and then going to the Nick Gage fight where it's the same thing. It's just ramped all the way up, and now he's like, he's not ready for it the first time, and he's presumably ready for it the next time, but there's still this animosity of the industry that is working against him. So that's consistent throughout. And it isn't until he turns around and gets back in the ring that he has earned the respect of the industry.
Yep.
It's just
big show.
Very interesting. And I feel like there's some stuff in here that they kept in for humor's sake, like the ketamine. Mm-hmm. There's a ketamine treatment that he goes through. That is like, that's the first time when I was watching that I was like, oh, hey, so like, I think this is all pretty legitimate, because you never know when you start doing wrestling documentaries, you're like, okay, is there a part of this documentary that is also kayfabe? Because the lines blur so much, but when they did the footage of him on the ketamine, I was like, okay, no, this is real. This happened.
Yeah.
And
that was such an interesting thing. And talking about like his family, and it's crazy how abrupt changes are in this, and not only just at the ending. Like I thought the ending was really good, going back to, not the ending was very good in the lead up to it, but I thought the entire thing in Detroit at the Legends of Wrestling show, I thought that was a nice little capper there. I think the Jack Perry thing at the end was probably in there, because in 2020, when this came out, he was signed to a big wrestling promotion at that time. And he's a rather big star right now as Jungle Boy Jack Perry. And so that kind of loops in right there. So like, if you're in the know of like who it is and who these people are, you're like, oh, that's cool. And so for...
That makes sense. Yeah.
For the not in the know, it's like, wow. But even then, it is a rather crazy, like, oh, yeah. And Luke Perry, which was one of his best friends, died earlier that year. And then it cuts back, and he brought him to the hospital, and it cuts back to the footage of somebody putting their hand in the camera. Like, oh, that is Luke Perry. Okay. They showed that, but didn't mention it 20 minutes
ago. It's just so weird. Just a but weird the choice.
Family, I did really appreciate. It touched my heart to watch between his wife and his daughter Coco through the whole thing. Is just like, this is so stupid. Why are you doing this? This is awful. To when he has the match with RJ City, she's in the crowd giving double fingers and just yelling and is like, proud.
When she's showing the footage to Courtney Cox and being like, no, look at this. This is actually really cool. And just, to see her come around was pretty cool.
That was awesome. Another big thing that I don't think people really think about if they don't watch wrestling is it definitely benefits him to have money. Because I don't think I saw him have the same pair of tights twice. And unless you're making big money, like tights are not cheap. Ring gear is not cheap. And unless you're like even big stars that are on TV right now, their gear is largely the same. A lot of women cycle through different gear If you're changing gear weekly, like that's crazy. You're a massive star if you're able to be doing that. But like the amount of different outfits he had certainly helps to have money. It lends credibility and star power to you, especially if you're putting in the work. But the familial relationship was very sweet. And the thing with his wife dressing up as Miss Elizabeth made me tear up a little bit.
That a little bit. I think when you say all this, one, I agree. It is very sweet. I love the family stuff so much. But I think this is what, when I said ego earlier, I think this is kind of what I was getting at. Because you have a man who has like everything really around him. He has everything. Yeah. He's got the money for all of the outfits and gear for each of these different little bits. He has the great family support unit. It is just about like wrestling, why don't these people like me? And that's where it's like, okay, this isn't the Rocky story necessarily. This is something very different. And there is something there that held me back a little bit with him sometimes. But I absolutely respect the work and effort he put in. But it always did kind of strike me as like, but like really, like you're like, even if this all fails for you,
you're going to be fine.
You're okay. Yeah. Like, the stakes aren't there in this documentary. Maybe that's it. Those are the words. The stakes aren't there.
Yep.
Until John Gage stabs him in the fucking neck. Like a psychopath.
Like a psycho.
Because he is a psychopath.
Oh, no. He has to go back and be lonely, not working in movies. She's got money. I gotta go back
and hang out with my wife and my ex-wife and my kids.
And my great big house.
And my huge house and my pool. And I have the money to have a backyard ring. And...
Yeah. Dude, oh my god, it's like, reaction.
Of, oh no, you're going to lose some more roles to Luke Wilson.
Yep. Yep. Oh my god. Man, dang. I don't know how much more we can really talk about this. I want to hear your guys' overall thoughts on this.
I went in pretty skeptical if I was going to like it or not. And by the end, I was like, I'm so glad I watched that. It was worth the commitment to sit there and watch it and take it in and see this journey that this man I have not thought about in a decade went on, and how he kind of, you know, found a little bit of peace that he needed.
It's beautiful.
You know, through out violence.
Of,
and-
on a scale of... on a scale of 0 to... 11 light tubes bundled together. What would you be giving this?
The old light tubes dozen.
I'm probably going to give it 8 fluorescent light tubes.
Nice. Nice. What about you, Ryan?
I really, for as much as it sounds like I'm bitching and whinging throughout this episode, I'm right there with Brian, I think. I went in probably maybe more excited, but I am so glad I watched this documentary, even if I have, like, conflicting thoughts about certain choices. They are choices, and they're interesting choices, and at least they're fucking choices. Like, give me this versus, like, your typical Netflix or whatever documentary now that, like, really just plays it safe and just, like, presents an event, and, like, that's it. Just, like, linear da-da-da-da-da-da. Mm-hmm. It is interesting. I love the family touches. I think there's a lot here for even if you're not like super into wrestling to like latch into is just like a human story. I think that just digging into the complexity of him, I think we could talk about like his psyche and mental state for like a whole episode in it of itself with what we're presented here. That you then add in the whole wrestling stuff, I think is even more fascinating. I'm there with Brian. I'm 8 out of 11 light tubes as well.
Nice. I am just so thrilled that I can bring something to the table that it's like, could you imagine me being like, we're going to watch a wrestling documentary? for this show. Yes. Yeah, you can imagine that, but I usually hold myself back and I wouldn't typically do something like that. But this is just, this has just enough crossover into like general appeal that I thought it would be interesting. And about halfway through the movie, I'm like, these guys fucking hate this.
Except for Ryan.
Ryan probably loves this. But no, I am so thrilled to hear you guys' thoughts on this. And Ryan, again, you went into the Dark Side of the Ring stuff. Mm-hmm. Man, I recommend The Life and Crimes of New Jack is one of the episodes. That one's wild, wild and very similar stuff to this. And also a new one, Samoa Joe and Necro Butcher match, is I think last week's episode, and they're on YouTube. So you can easily find those, but those are two I'd recommend. There's a two part on the Chris Benoit incident. What happened there, and Owen Hart. There's also, they cover so much stuff in here, and they're like an hour long, and I could sit there and just be glued to it. I'm just thrilled that you guys watched this. You came away knowing more, seeing things from a different perspective. One of my favorite things about wrestling is I love the behind the scenes stuff and like what's going on in the head as to what they're trying to present. And it's really cool to kind of pull back that curtain and to, I don't know, garner a touch of respect in some regards to not only that, but for what people do. And this dude, the dude didn't need to do this. He didn't need to get stabbed in the throat and then finish a match. It's absolutely insane.
Part of him thought he did need issues. To, though.
What's that?
Part of him thought he needed to.
And he made it very clear multiple times to his wife. And multiple times to nobody at all. Nobody in general. I appreciate that she just calls up his best friend, the cop, and is like, hey, can you go to Mexico tomorrow to babysit him?
Make sure he doesn't do anything stupid.
Like, I love that this dude's just like, yeah, I'm sure it's no problem with work.
I also appreciate that, like, in between every match, there's a cut to, like, him at the doctor to make sure he doesn't have any internal bleeding or he didn't break anything.
Every doctor's like, you're gonna die. Dude, you gotta
stop doing this.
Yeah. He gets back from Mexico and goes to get himself checked out because his sternum hurts. And she goes, when did you get in the car accident?
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh my fucking god. Crazy.
Yep.
Anyways, there's pacing issues through here. About halfway through, when I was thinking like you guys hate this, is because it got drawn out a bit too much. I wish I don't know, about 20 minutes in the first three quarters got removed, and instead it was put into stuff in the last quarter.
Agreed.
Mm-hmm. Because it was the first three quarters too long, last quarter too short. Other than that, I love this. I love this guy. I love the story. It's nuts. Out of 11 leg tubes, I'd give it 9, and then like that one half.
The half that you used to stab.
Yeah, the half that got used to just shank him in the neck. That's what I'm giving it.
Ironically enough, this actually gave me, as not a wrestling fan, more respect for David Arquette. So,
yes, yes,
mm-hmm. Mission accomplished.
Agreed. Right?
Didn't even want you guys to respect wrestling, just David Arquette.
Just David Arquette.
Real quick, I never would have imagined that looking at one of your cheat sheets for this, we would be graced with, not only Courtney Cox and Luke Perry, but also Booker Huffman. Ric Flair actually makes sense, but Peter Avalon has never appeared on a cheat sheet ever in the history of his life. The Nasty Boys on a cheat sheet is fucking wild. Right? But yeah, how did this do for the audiences?
Well, this actually is kind of all over the place in a weird way. Rotten Tomatoes, 85% critical, 87% audience. IMDb 7.1. And then on Metacritic, it's only a 66. And that's on like Letterboxd, it's a 3.6.
Okay.
66 so like, does feel pretty low on Metacritic. No, Metacritic. IMDb 7.1 is pretty good.
Right, it's, which is weird because IMDb is usually trends lower. But
yeah. Yeah, that is pretty weird.
I'm assuming that this has a lot more reviews from audience than it does critics. And that is what is swaying it. But if that's the case, that also means that the wrestling fans like the documentary and therefore are coming around on David Arquette.
I don't hear anybody shitting on David Arquette anymore.
How long did he wrestle after this?
He is retired now. He only wrestled into the 2020s. So I'm sure once the pandemic hit and things shut down, he kind of hung up the boots there. But he had like a good two and a half year run, which, again, that is 2 years longer than you would imagine some Hollywood actor. I say that loosely. An actor from Hollywood royalty, I guess.
But less of a time that you would expect a WCW champion.
Yeah. Oh my fuck!
I had to do it to him.
That's crazy, boys. Thank you so much for watching this. This is nuts. I fucking hope Kyle still watched it, regardless of his family stuff. I hope he made his mom watch this.
Hell yeah.
That'd be awesome. I hope his mom loves David Arquette and hated him before, mainly for the wrestling stuff.
She's a huge Eight-Legged Freaks fan.
Aren't we all? I love it. We both said opposite things there.
Brian, it is your week next week, and tell us why we're watching Eight-Legged Freaks.
Well, it's Arquette August. No.
Arquette,
which is kind of a theme that we were going to do anyway. No, I couldn't decide what to do. There's been some stuff that I've been wanting to do, but it didn't seem long enough. So finally, I got to a point where I had multiple of those. So we're going to be doing a triple feature for next week. They're okay. All shorts, so don't panic. I'm not asking you to watch a lot of stuff. We're doing a triple feature, and I think you guys will pick up on the theme pretty quickly. We're going to be doing Too Many Cooks, unedited footage of a bear, and This House Has People in It.
This House Has People in It, yes. Oh, great picks.
I have heard of it. Zero of these. So
excellent.
I am going to need a link at some point.
I will definitely send links, and the less you know, the better.
Yeah.
Okay.
On all of them.
I will not look anything up.
Yep. Sean, oh, I cannot wait to hear.
Oh, man, that's actually really exciting that you're going to have an authentic experience with these.
I know. I don't care. Like, yeah, it's, I'm sure Brian, me, and I think Kyle has seen these too. I think we're all going to be in the same place. I'm just going to be looking at you, Sean.
I have only seen one of them.
What did you think? What did you think? What are your
thoughts? Please do. I, much like David Arquette, I am just seeking approval and really just any sort of validation. So look at me the whole time, dead in the eyes. I'm actually going to shrink everybody else on my screen and just us lock eyes.
And just, locked in.
I'm so glad that I said I need links because it made me remember that for the Patreon episode that we'll be releasing 3 days ago at this point, tomorrow for us, I said that I was going to include YouTube links for Slam Ball Top Plays and Yankee Candle Village, Massachusetts' largest candle store in the Patreon description for the people who listened. It wasn't all about people who love trains. We did get to other things. So if you are curious about what we talked about and what these links are for, head on over to patreon.com/experiencegrind, or you can just go to the website, experiencegrind.com. There's a link for the Patreon there. Little as a dollar. Come get a free episode every week and some links to videos and stuff. It's gotten rather offensive lately. I don't know what has been up. But Ryan hates women. So yeah, also on the website.
I feel like there's a very common link and it's the person talking.
Me? Anyways, wait, what were we trying to bury Kyle for this week? Instead of doing that, I just shit on you again.
Around foreigners.
Xenophobia. Oh, yeah.
Especially hates people from India.
He's afraid of them.
Which is ironic because he loves Indian food.
He doesn't hate them.
He would just prefer white people to make his Indian food. Also on the website, experiencecrime.com, you can find a link to our Discord where you can come and tell me how awful of a person that I am. But until next week, go shank yourself with a light tube or something.
It's the edge stop!
God, I'm never gonna be absent on an episode again. You nuked Kyle there. Jesus. Oh my God. I know I feel guilty because I set you up, but boy, you spiked the fuck out of it. You did. Oh my God.